Hi, I'm Mike Sainsbury, and welcome to this ASICast. A number of recent research studies have highlighted the public's concern with the media. It's clear that trust has declined seriously in the last few years, and trust in advertising is part of that trend. The tracking technology increasingly used by the advertising industry is also understood by the public to be the technology responsible for many of the problems associated with the media more generally, of which the spread of fake news is a significant element. In this ASICast, Brian Jacobs interviews the respected advertising and media guru Nick Manning and asks him what the advertising industry needs to do about this and how advertisers can ensure that the marketing of their brands can be seen to be conducted responsibly.
Well, hi, everybody. This is Brian Jacobs, and today I'm joined by Nick Manning, who is the founder of the media agency Manning Gottlieb, that was subsequently acquired by Omnicom and became part of the OMD group. And more recently, Nick has been the chief strategy officer for the last 10 or so years at Ubiquiti. So hi there, Nick.
Hello.
So we're going to speak a little bit about some of the remarks that you've made on conference platforms recently, Nick, and most notably on the Advertising Association Lead 18 platform, where you gave a paper, a very well-received paper, if I may say, on how brands should market responsibly. So maybe you could start with maybe you explaining a little bit about what you meant by that. What does it take for a brand to market responsibly?
I guess the background really is what people think about advertising up to a point. And it's very, some of the recent research about all of this is very damning indeed. If for example, you look at the Edelman Trust Barometer that was published recently about the public's view of media, it has declined quite dramatically in the last few years. And compared to other institutions such as government, media now trails many of them in the public's estimation. So people's confidence in media has declined quite significantly as a result of fake news and other similar things. And advertising has gone in the same direction. And to a certain extent, the public see advertising as part of the problem, because the public is quite clever and realizes that things like tracking technologies, which are essentially part of advertising's armory, are responsible for a lot of the problems in the media and fake news being a big part of that. So advertising is not viewed as positively as it used to be. And in fact, the research that is conducted each year by the Advertising Association in the UK shows a very, very similar picture, where advertising is at its lowest ebb of reputation that it's been for virtually the whole time the research has been conducted. And there are several other indicators of that as well. So advertising at the moment is not enjoying a golden period. And the responsibility for rectifying that really comes back to advertisers first and foremost. It also covers the whole of the ecosystem. But advertisers need to treat their public, their audiences, with respect and with responsibility, especially when it comes to the use of people's data. So what I was calling for really was a very high degree of responsibility by advertisers specifically on behalf of the entire industry to try and restore or certainly redress the balance in the way that advertising is viewed by the public.
So do you think, I mean, this issue of sort of how data is both collected and then used, I mean, both by, I mean, ultimately, I suppose, on by advertisers, but on their behalf quite often by agencies and by ad tech companies and whatever. You think that there's that it's really up to them also to sort of act responsibly with what they, as far as what they do with the data is concerned?
Yes, absolutely. I think the public is very sensitive about the amount of data that is taken from them. People are much smarter than sometimes they're given credit for. They realise that all of these free services that are available on the internet, and let's face it, nearly all of them are, there's a price to be paid for that. And to a certain extent, you know, if it's free, you are the product and your data is what people want. But they're prepared to give of themselves in terms of some of that data as part of a value exchange. But if that data is then used for the wrong purposes and is mistreated or is packaged up or is otherwise misused, then that's not part of that value exchange. It's not, it wasn't part of the deal. It's not what they signed up for. So to a certain extent, I think the public is really quite concerned about the way that their data may be used by other parties, and also the effect that's having on the media channels themselves, and that in the form of things like fake news.
Yeah, I mean, I've done some work actually in another part of the forest, as it were, where it becomes clear that consumers do understand that there's a transactional element to this. So it seems that, I'm not sure whether this was quite the case, I don't know, 5 years ago, say, but I think now people do understand that if they provide something, some data, then they get something back, and the something they get back might be more relevant advertising or special offers or money off or kind of whatever it may be. But they do seem to realize there's this transactional element.
Yeah.
And so I suppose, therefore, it's also fair to say that when the data is somehow misused in whatever way, they're aware of that as well, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, and I think they are, because as far as they're concerned, and the internet is at the heart of this, of course, but you know, the great thing about the internet is that most things are free, and the value exchange is that you get lots of fantastic content for nothing, and the quid pro quo is that you give your details. When that starts to spill over into creepiness, in inverted commas, via things like retargeting, people start to go, hold on a second, this has gone a little bit too far. So I think there's a very, very difficult balance to be struck between people's willingness to give of themselves, you know, understanding the value exchange, but also feeling that they're being somewhat taken advantage of by through their willingness to grant access to their data.
Well, they're being taken advantage of, but they're also becoming irritated, aren't they?
This is one of the other things. Like one of the other things I said in my piece at the Advertising Association is that there is now too much advertising, particularly on the internet. And you know, in the past, advertising was in some form or another controlled either through regulation, so the amount of minutage on television was set in law, as it were, or you had editorial systems and controls of how much advertising there would be relative to the editorial context, which in the internet doesn't really exist. So the net result is unlimited supply of advertising on the internet, and probably too much for the average consumer. And the other thing, of course, is that because so much of advertising money goes to Facebook and Google in particular in the internet, the other publishers, which is everybody else, the long tail, has to try and make up their revenue in whichever way they can. So they end up putting a lot of advertising on their pages, which leads to clutter, slow rendering, and that leads to ad blocking. So, you know, the economics of the internet advertising display system are not helping very much here, and as much as Facebook and Google are hoovering up so much of the money, that there's not enough money to go around for everybody else, so they have to cut corners in order to accommodate more revenue.
It's rather interesting that, I mean, I suppose at the heart of all this is the fact that advertisers are looking for very big numbers, as in gross impressions, without giving a great deal of thought as to what those gross impressions in fact mean in terms of the context in which they're received, or even the sort of the sort of places in which the editorial, for want of a better expression, content that's around the ads. And because they're focused just on the gross impression numbers, I suppose, people just pour money after the biggest gross impression numbers, which are Facebook and Google, and so you finish up with masses and masses and masses of ads.
You do. Well, this part of the problem here is a definition of reach, which used to mean coverage, which is the coverage you achieved through advertising. The way that it's used in the internet ecosystem is the potential to reach a lot of people. And Facebook and Google can reach a lot of people, and everybody chases reach. But it's the equivalent of putting an ad on every page of a big newspaper or in every commercial break on television. When they talk about reach, they're talking about, oh, we reach 2 billion people worldwide. Well, yes, you do. But in order for me to reach people with my advertising, I literally have to soak the pages with my advertising. So I think part of it is definitional. about that even the language we use has become a little bit corrupted along the way. So yes, of course, Facebook have got a lot of subscribers, but you don't necessarily reach all those subscribers just by placing an ad on Facebook. I mean, which page do you put it on?
Yeah.
So I think the whole thing's got slightly out of control and become somewhat unregulated, either by the regulators or even by the media platforms themselves.
I suppose that Facebook or Google or indeed any of the big platforms would say, yes, but we can also personalize, or at least we can segment, maybe not personalize. In fact, I suppose they can personalize.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the route down which advertisers are going to go? I mean, there's been various remarks from Proctor about personalization at scale or something, I think was the expression that Mark Pritchard came up with. Do you see people going down that road, that they're going to be, there's going to be, I don't know, many more different creative treatments that are, hundreds of creative treatments in theory that could run against hundreds of segments or even could be personalized? And do you think that would be acceptable to consumers, or do you think that also is getting a bit creepy?
Well, I think, there's a real balance to be struck here between personalization and intrusiveness. And I think people want to see advertising that is relevant to them, but you don't necessarily have to collect 90 data points on those people in order to do that.
Yeah, right.
I think targeting has always been one of the key components of any advertising, really. But it doesn't have to be directed exactly at you. It can be directed at somebody like you, and that can be contextual. It could be, I like baseball, therefore I'm happy to see ads in a baseball context. And it just so happens that using basic targeting, it might be relevant to you. You're a male, you're a certain age, you like certain things. Beer, for example. So I think it's that balance, really. So, mass personalization feels a little bit to me like advertising to a lot of people at the same time, but with a twist. Now, via dynamic creative optimization, in theory, you can do more of that. But I think there's a balance to be struck between trying to do that and trying to make your brand famous. So the way that I look at this, and I saw some very good research recently that has been done by Les Binet and Peter Field, which you'll know about with the IPA last year, which talked about the optimum balance between brand and activation. And the brand side of this relies upon fame. It relies upon being a well-known brand in the public sphere. And then there is activation, which is a more direct sell. We used to, used to be television and direct mail and black and white newspapers in the old days. Now, of course, it's brand building and then it's activation through digital channels. And one of the things that they say is, for every brand, for every occasion, for every task, you need to understand the ratio of brand versus activation and the role that brand plays in your business and the effect that that has on everything else. And that's a pretty good starting point for not just for media strategy, but for advertising, even marketing strategy, is to understand that getting that balance right. And therefore, personalization per se may take you too far down the activation route, and you might lose something in the process, which is the ability to use your brand to actually achieve other objectives, including making the personalization work harder.
It's rather interesting because I think Peter and Les came up with this 60-40 split, didn't they? 60% branding, 40% activation.
But the key thing is that
it will vary.
It will vary enormously. Exactly. And for some people, activation could be 100%. Exactly. If you're selling direct to consumers and you don't care much about anything else, and it's just about the cost per lead, cost per acquire, it's all activation in the same way that people used to use. You can use search for that. One of the first things you've got to do is work out, is my brand important short-term and long-term? And what ratio should I be looking at between brand and activation? And the way to get to that is to do an awful lot of research and look at the data and figure that out. And obviously comms strategy should begin with that kind of analysis.
It's rather interesting. We're discussing this today, sort of whatever we are, sort of the 9th of February, just after the Super Bowl, where, of course, the festival of advertising is what it boils down to now in America. I mean, I think there's a football game going on somewhere in the background, but it's basically largely to be about ads these days. And the ads that seem to have at least achieve the greatest sort of critical acclaim do seem to be ads, you know, fame inducing or fame making ads for Tide or for
Amazon
Alexa and so on, all of which were, you know, were wonderful, but they were brand building ads.
Sure.
It's a slight irony, of course, that, you know, for someone like Amazon to be doing that at a time when, of course, certain misguided people in the digital space think the television's dying. So exactly what Amazon and the other digital players are going to do when television's dead is another another matter. But I mean, they obviously see the effectiveness of doing that.
Well, I most significant e-commerce players, Amazon included, Google and Facebook and others, eBay, use brand advertising often on television, because it drives traffic to their website, differentiates them from the competition, makes them famous. And so there's no, I don't think there shouldn't be too much debate about this, should there? You know, most brands, as they get bigger, want to use television advertising or other forms of brand building because they know that it works for them. So I don't know why sometimes we have these debates, because everybody understands this, and yet we keep having to talk about it.
Yes, I know, it is peculiar.
Yeah.
So what do you think, I mean, given that you've explained, you know, how brands should market themselves more responsibly, and there's the whole ecosystem issue of not just the platforms, of course, but also the agencies and the ad tech businesses and so on, all of whom have got a certain role to play within this, and indeed can take some responsibility themselves for the state we sort of find ourselves in. Are you confident that this is going to, that advertising is going to regain its trusted place, if it ever had a trusted place, but at least regain a degree of trust with the public?
Well, I don't think anybody can be confident about that unless we do something about it.
Yes, quite.
And I guess some people might describe what I was saying as naive. I describe it as idealistic. And what I mean by that is that if the advertising-funded industry, including Facebook and Google and advertising technologies and media agencies and media owners and everybody else, pulls together and behaves responsibly, then we stand a chance of making advertising great again, to borrow a Trumpism. But that would require a degree of collaboration which may not happen overnight, particularly given that the economic disparity between the success of Facebook and Google, everybody else in the digital ecosystem, and everybody else in the offline ecosystem. So, you know, unfortunately, not everybody has the same commercially aligned interests here. But if we don't do that, then I see that it's going to continue to be a struggle. I hope that data privacy regulation like GDPR will help in the longer term as well. I hope that advertisers will understand that brand building is important and will continue to be so. So the pendulum will swing back towards brand building, which means that other media channels will start to get a bigger chunk of the revenue pie. So some of this might be self-correcting. But what I was saying really is I'd like the whole advertising industry to behave responsibly, to bring advertising back into root health. But I also was saying that I would like to see the players in the advertising ecosystem behaving responsibly with each other, by which I mean media agencies working responsibly with advertisers in their best interests without conflict of interests, advertising technology companies not just going for the quick buck by buying business pre-IPO, etc., etc. So, you know, this issue of responsibility pervades many parts of the ecosystem and covers a broader definition of trust. If we don't do those things, then there's no reason why the tide should turn. You know, again, it might be asking a lot, but I think we ought to be having this debate to see how far we can get. And it's good to see the UK broadcasters, for example, getting together to work together to achieve certain things. It's just a bit unfortunate that's only really happening because they can see the threat coming from the big Silicon Valley players into their territory. But fear's not a bad way of getting people to do things. So in the absence of seeing the light, it's not bad if they feel the heat.
Excellent. Well, we could talk about this, I'm sure, all afternoon.
But we certainly could,
Thank you so much for joining us for this ASI cast, and we hope very much to see you on an ASI platform soon.
My pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
You can listen to other ASI cast interviews by accessing the archive of recordings at asiconferences.com.